Hello and welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, with York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. No huge news this week. Had a good first degree at my home lodge last week, and I have another one tonight. Last week, I received a suggestion to read something about brothers who are not true to the craft, or perhaps have not been faithful to their obligations. It was uncanny, since I had just read an article on this, so I will read that for you right now, entitled They Lied on Their Knees by William A. Carpenter, Right Worshipful Grand Master of Pennsylvania. This short talk bulletin has been adapted from an article appearing in August 1984 issue of the Pennsylvania Freemason. It has been republished as a short talk bulletin because of the many readers who recommended its use. Taking an oath and an obligation is a binding and serious thing. Accepting and fulfilling an oath and an obligation is an honorable thing. Not adhering to an oath and an obligation is a disgraceful and dishonorable act. During my first months as a Grand Master, it has been shocking and disturbing to learn of the number of Masons who have lied on their knees. Apparently, there are Masons who, having taken the oaths and obligations of 3 symbolic degrees, have not only lied on their knees, but have evidenced a total disregard for the Masonic advice spelled out in the charges shared following the degrees. Following the Entered Apprentice Mason's degree, the charge says, "In the state, a Freemason is to behave as a peaceable and dutiful citizen, conforming cheerfully to the government under which he lives." That same charge says, "Nothing can be more shocking to all faithful Freemasons than to see any of their brethren profane the sacred rules of Freemasons, and such as do, they wish, had never been accepted into the fraternity." In the ancient charge delivered following the conferring of the sublime degree of a Master Mason, we are admonished, "You are bound by duty, honor, and gratitude to be faithful to your trust, to support the dignity of your character upon every occasion, and to enforce by precept and example obedience to the tenets of Freemasonry." Every Mason should at all times conform to and abide by the rules and regulations of the fraternity. These include the legislation and bylaws of our Blue Lodge, the constitution of our Blue Lodge, the constitution and edicts of the Grand Lodge, and also those ancient customs, usages, and landmarks of the craft that have been passed down to us through the ages. Thus, we have a set of rules and regulations that govern our conduct in our own lodge, those that govern our conduct in the outside world. All of these taken together set the boundaries and should govern our conduct at all times. Our Blue Lodge, the Grand Lodge, and the Grand Master have ample authority to enforce the rules, regulations, and edicts, even as they relate to violations of civil law over Pennsylvania Masons, wherever they may be, and also over all Masons who live within our jurisdiction. By far, the most important rules concerning our conduct are those governing our actions toward the world outside Freemasonry. The offenses within our lodge, and toward other brethren, and even the Grand Lodge, can be handled without adverse publicity, but when we forget the rules laid down for our behavior toward non-Masons, we blacken the good name of every member of the craft. There is a tendency among many Masons to regard the Grand Lodge as some obscure clique, or a mysterious group working behind the scenes to decide and dictate the affairs of Freemasonry. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania is comprised of approximately 25,000 living past masters and wardens of more than 570 symbolic lodges in Pennsylvania. Masonic trials are unpleasant affairs that consume both time and effort and often impose a financial burden on a lodge. Even the outright suspensions and expulsions handed down by the Grand Master are distressing. Most, if not all, actions could be avoided by these steps. 1. We should make certain that every Mason is educated Masonically so that he knows what is expected of him as a Mason. 2. When we find a brother forgetting his Masonic teachings, we should whisper good counsel in his ear, gently admonishing him of his errors, and endeavor, in a friendly way, to bring about a true and lasting reformation. 3. And finally, we should guard our portals so that we accept only those men who will be receptive to our teachings and will not find it difficult to conduct themselves as Masons. Too often, we have witnessed shocking examples of the irresponsibilities of men in high places as well as in low places. As a man thinketh, so is he. The good name of Freemasonry is not the result of what we do not do. It is the result of practicing outside the lodge those great moral lessons we are taught within the lodge. At no time in the history of our nation has there been a greater need to exercise the principles and moral teachings of Freemasonry than now. Freemasonry is one of the great moral forces remaining in the world today. But if Freemasonry is to achieve its honorable purpose, that of building a better world, it must first build better men to work at that task. No man has any right to claim to be a Freemason unless he has endeavored to put into practice the lessons received when he was entered, crafted, and raised. A Mason should never entertain the thought that he must go to a lodge to practice his Masonry. Masonry must be practiced in daily life, where human kindness and helpfulness and honesty are so much needed. The surest way to make Freemasonry useful is to make use of Freemasonry. Every Mason is charged with the responsibility of keeping the reputation of the fraternity unsullied. Masonry cannot condone the continued membership of those who bring disgrace, dishonor, and discredit to our ancient and honorable fraternity. Hence, my brethren, if and when you learn of a case or cases whereby the behavior of a Mason or Masons borders on or actually results in a felony or another form of un-Masonic conduct, please make such a case or cases known to the Grand Master through proper and expeditious channels. Today, we hear it said from time to time that our own lodges are winking at violations of Masonic law. I ask the question, are we growing that lax in the enforcement of our penal code? If such be the case, then it is time serious concern and consideration be given to this matter, this unfortunate circumstance within our craft. And, for the record, be it known that this Grand Master plans to give the matter top priority in an effort to rid our rolls of any undesirables. Our priority emphasis will at all times cover the three types of Masonic offenses. 1. Violations of moral law. 2. Violations of the laws of Freemasonry, and 3. Violations of the laws of the land, including moral turpitude. We cannot deny that there are men on our membership rolls whose lives, conduct, and character reflect no real credit on Freemasonry, whose ears seem to turn from its beautiful lessons of morality, duty, and honor, whose hearts seem untouched by its soothing, manly influences of fraternal kindness, and whose hands are not open to aid in living deeds and charity. We express our grief as we acknowledge this truth. These men, though in our temples, are not of our temples in the true sense of the word. They are among us, but they are not with us. They belong to our household, but they are not of our faith. We have sought to teach them, but they have failed to heed the instruction. Seeing, they have not perceived. Hearing, they have not understood, or prefer not to benefit by the symbolic language in which our fraternal lessons of wisdom are communicated. The fault is not with Freemasonry or with us, that we have not given, but with them that they have not perceived or received. And indeed, hard and unjust would it be to censor the Masonic fraternity because of partaking of the infirmity or weakness of human wisdom and human means. It has been unable to achieve the perfection desired for all who come within its environs. The denial of Peter, the doubting of Thomas, or the betrayal of Judas should cast no reproach on so grand, so long established, and honorable a fraternity as that of Freemasonry. But misconduct and misdeeds do hurt our craft, and bring grief to all worthy Freemasons. Freemasonry prescribes no principles that are opposed to the sacred teachings of the divine lawgiver, and sanctions no acts that are not consistent with the sternest morality and the most faithful obedience to government and the laws. And while this continues to be its character, it cannot without the most atrocious injustice be held responsible for the acts of unworthy members. The fact is, it is no secret that the moral fiber of the people of our great nation has broken down. It has been noticeable since the late 1940s. We often hear of white-collar crime, embezzlement, fraud, collusion in some of our largest corporate boardrooms, with guilty fines running in hundreds of thousands of dollars, with our peers only seeing the wrong if the culprit got caught. These are not the lessons we are taught at the altar of Freemasonry. Perhaps it would be difficult to convince many Masons that we have brethren guilty of the quick fix and fast buck. But we have had them. We may still have them. And with immediate and proper Masonic disciplinary action, we shall go to the top degree to eliminate such a curse from Freemasonry. The young people of our Masonic-affiliated youth organizations are always watching us closely. These young people have new sophistication and awareness of what is right and what is wrong. They have their Masonic advisors whom they naturally emulate. But to them, all Masons are the same and supposed to possess honesty and integrity. These young people are the future of our communities and also our fraternity. We cannot afford to let them down, my brethren. What can Masons do to remedy this situation? We must begin at the top the first step of the recommending a petitioner. The mere possession of sufficient money to pay the necessary fee does not qualify a man to be made a Mason. Before a member signs his name to any petition for the degrees of Freemasonry, he must assure himself, beyond any question of a doubt, that the petitioner he recommends is, in a sense, already a Mason in his heart, and that if he is accepted, the member will never have cause to regret his endorsement. That is the most important duty and responsibility which a member owes to the Masonic fraternity, his Blue Lodge, and himself. And my brethren, through investigation of each and every petitioner to our respective lodges is not only the proper time, but also the only time for a Freemason to safeguard against accepting anyone who could very well bring disgrace, dishonor, or discredit to the craft. Oh, perhaps the galleries are full of critics relative to points covered by this article. Those who criticize plan no ball. They fight no fights. They make no mistakes because they attempt nothing. The real doers are down in the arena. The man who makes no mistakes lacks boldness and the spirit of adventure. He is the one who never tries anything. He is the brake on the wheel of progress. And yet it cannot be truly said that he makes no mistakes, because the biggest mistake he makes is the very fact that he tries nothing, does nothing, has absolutely no positive input into the cause of Freemasonry, and just seems to be his happy, useless self in criticizing those who are making an attempt to do certain things. We have learned to tolerate our critics, but when you have faith in your plans, designs, and convictions, you govern yourself accordingly. I think it was Shakespeare who wrote, "Sweet are the uses of adversity." It has also been proven that adversity causes some to break and others to break records. And in the words of Burke, "He who wrestles with us strengthens our nerves and sharpens our skill." My brethren, it was once stated that the real purpose of Freemasonry is the pursuit of excellence. I like that statement. Every lesson in every degree of Freemasonry reiterates the idea that the individual is committed to self-improvement, to the acceptance of responsibility, to deeper sympathy and benevolence, to greater truth, to genuine love of fellow men. So mote it always be. Copyright 1997 to 2010, JTME Services, all rights reserved. No doubt an interesting piece. Next is this week's famous Freemason, Clark Gable, 1901 to 1960. Clark Gable's mother died when he was 7 months old. At age 16, he quit high school, went to work in Akron, Ohio, at a tire factory, and decided to become an actor after seeing the play The Bird of Paradise. He toured in stock companies, worked oil fields, and sold ties. In 1924, he reached Hollywood with the help of Portland, Oregon theater manager Josephine Dillon, who coached and later married him. She was 17 years his senior. After playing a few bit parts, he returned to the stage, becoming a lifelong friend with Lionel Barrymore. After several failed screen tests for Barrymore and Daryl F. Zanuck, Gable was signed in 1930 by MGM's Irving Thalberg. Joan Crawford asked for him as a co-star in Dance Fool's Dance in 1931, and the public loved him manhandling Norma Shearer in A Free Soul in 1931, the same year. His unshaven lovemaking with braless Jean Harlow in Red Dust in 1932 made him MGM's most important star. At one point, he refused an assignment, and the studio punished him by loaning him out to the, at the time, low-rent Columbia Pictures, which put him in Frank Capra's It Happened One Night in 1934, which won him an Oscar. He returned to far more substantial roles at MGM, such as Fletcher Christian in Mutiny on the Bounty in 1935, and Rhett Butler in Gone with the Wind in 1939. When his third wife, Carol Lombard, died in a plane crash returning from a war bond drive, a grief-stricken Gable joined the U.S. Army Air Force and was off the screen for 3 years flying combat missions in Europe. When he returned to the studio, they regarded his salary as excessive and did not want to renew his contract. He freelanced, but his films didn't do that well at the box office. He announced during the filming of The Misfits in 1961 that for the first time he was going to be a father. 2 months later, he died of a heart attack. He was laid to rest beside Carol Lombard at Forest Lawn Cemetery, and that it is said that he only became a Freemason to please his father. However, that seems to be hard to believe since Clark showed no remorse over his father's passing, so I doubt he really cared much what he thought. I don't know about the rest of you, but it's a very tragic story. 1933 Beverly Hills Lodge number 528 in California was his lodge. And I want to close this week with a short piece from the California Freemason magazine from October-November issue 2011, entitled The Masonic Explorer, Finding the Courage to Face the Unknown. There is an old question asked of a Mason at an important point in his Masonic life. Whence came you and whither are you traveling? When the question is asked, there is not much time for contemplation. The question is answered quickly and ritualistically, and then often forgotten as the more dramatic sequel in the ritual captures our attention. It is too bad in a way that we cannot stop at this point in a ceremony and take time to think about the question and formulate an answer which is specific to each Mason who has asked it. Where are you coming from? And knowing what you know now about Freemasonry, where are you going? There is an old joke about Christopher Columbus which is singularly unfair to him, but which nonetheless is still being told. In one form, it goes like this. When he started out, he didn't know where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he was. And when he got home, he didn't know where he had been. The joke is unfair because anyone who has the courage to strike out into the unknown is to be commended, not ridiculed. The courageous do not stay home. They go forth to places that they have never known before because of the challenge that it presents. And when they arrive, they have to incorporate all of their previous experiences into making the new present understandable. And in this new present may take years, if not generations, to truly understand. When the courageous return home with the new information, they may never know how great an impact their courage has made on the future. In a sense, we are asking each Mason to have the courage to seek a future that he cannot yet know. Our symbolic way of expressing this is, whither are you traveling? But what we are really asking is, do you have the courage to seek out the unknown toward which Freemasonry points? Freemasonry is a journey, and when a man stands for the first time at its gate, the West Gate, he cannot know where the journey will lead. We present him with tools and implements to use along the way, but we do not tell him how to use them. He must figure that out for himself. He is surrounded by friends and brothers at the beginning of the journey, but there will be a time when he will be alone, and when he must discover the way forward without any guidance, except for the guidance of the Supreme Architect of the Universe. He learns that the road ahead will not always be smooth. It will sometimes be rough and rugged, one filled with dangers, real or imaginary, but dangers nonetheless. Only courage will cause him to begin the journey, and only courage will cause him to pursue the journey's end, even when assailed by forces stronger than he, which may, in the end, prove fatal. Masons should frequently ask themselves the question that was once posed to them, whither are you traveling? It will take courage to ask it, for it is easier to drift through life without answering the question than it is to accept its challenge. But in the end, the journey's end, it will be worth it. The words from Robert Frost's poem, The Road Not Taken, says it all. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. That's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed. Look for little extras on the blog in the next few weeks, courtesy of some good brothers from all around. Remember to like the show on Facebook, and you can find it by going to the address www.facebook.com/whencecameyou. Follow us on Twitter at whencecameyou, and add us to your circle on Google Plus at the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. Also, feel free to email the show at that same address. And remember, links to the Android and Apple app for the show are on the website, www.wcypodcast.blogspot.com, and those will give you some extras also. They will also allow you to listen without syncing. It'll stream the show right to your mobile device, and of course, the app will also allow you to download an episode if you want it. Anyway, we'll talk to you all next week, and until then, be well. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.